Let's go ahead and get started on another week of our verse-by-verse, four-and-a-half-year journey through all of God's inspired Word by turning to 1 Kings chapter 15, where we're going to begin in verse number 17 in just a moment. We have arrived at a time where we have two sources regularly of information regarding the history of Israel, 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles. And so we'll end up bouncing back and forth between them from time to time. So I hope you have a Bible that's got a couple of markers in it so that you can keep up with this. The situation is such that we've got the southern kingdom of Judah, which is always going to be underneath the rule of a descendant of David. It's at Jerusalem, that's its headquarters, and the temple is located inside the boundaries of this kingdom. But to the north of there, we've got the northern tribes of Israel that split away after the death of Solomon during the reign of Rehoboam, and they established Jeroboam as their first king. And God is actually the one that permitted Jeroboam to become that first king and told him that if he would just stick with the covenant, his dynasty would last forever. But he did not stick with the covenant. He developed and designed an alternate form of worship of the one who brought them out of Egypt. He used golden calves placed at Dan up in the north and Bethel down near the border with Judah as a mechanism of keeping his people faithful to the northern tribal region. Well, his dynasty didn't last. And we are now looking at the next dynasty, the dynasty of Baasha, who had executed or assassinated the last member of the Jeroboam dynasty. Now, in the south, we have Asa, who is the current king, the current Davidic king of Judah. And he has been a good king. He has gotten rid of a lot of the false worship. He even removed his own, I think, grandmother from a position of leadership in the cult of Asherah. And so there's been about 10 years of peace under Asa. And that's between 906 and 896 BC, I believe. Then that peace ends. And it ends by Baasha deciding that he wants to reorder the border between the two countries. The father of Asa had actually confiscated some of the territory of the northern tribal regions during his time on the throne, and it even captured Bethel, the city where the southern golden calf was located. And so Asa, no doubt, would have cleaned all of that up as part of his revivalist movement. Well, Baasha has now decided he wants to recapture that territory and to make the border very secure, to keep his people from going to Judah and to keep the Judah armies from making any further incursions into his territory. So that's what we see in 1 Kings 15:17. Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and built Ramah. Now Ramah is the modern city of Ramallah, which just happens to be a few miles south of Bethel. And so that's where we find out that the northern kingdom must have recaptured the city of Bethel and probably reestablished their golden calf worship in that city. Now, here's what Baasha does with Ramah. Says that he might permit no one to go out or to come in to Asa, king of Judah. So he wants to shut down any type of travel between the two kingdoms. And the most obvious travel, I think, that we're talking about here is travel to the Jerusalem Temple, to the worship site, the authentic worship site of He Who Is. So we've got a clampdown on border travel, but that is also a clampdown on trade travel. And so Assad does something here that shows a lack of faith, and it will then blossom into outright rebellion against the true and living God. So verse number 18 says, "Then Asa took all the silver and gold that were left in the treasures of the house of He Who Is, and the treasures of the king's house, and gave them into the hands of his servant." Now we've heard already about a time when some of these treasures had been tapped by the Egyptians invading the territory and taking a lot of the resources kept in storage from the time of Solomon. So now here Assad digs down into those remaining resources, and he's going to use it to buy the favor of a non-Israeli king. Now, what he should be doing, and I think we're correct in critiquing him on this, is that he should have gone to the temple and called upon the name of the Lord and asked for assistance against the northern kingdom. But instead, he does this. Let's continue verse number 18. "King Asa sent them," that is his servants with all of that wealth, "to Ben-Hadad, the son of Tabrimon, the son of Hezion, king of Syria, who lived in Damascus, saying," so this is the new administration in the Syrian area, the Aramean, as they were called back at this time, the northern neighbors of the kingdom of United Israel, and now the northern neighbors of the northern kingdom of Israel. So Asa bribes him, bribes Ben-Hadad, whose name, by the way, means the son of Hadad, who is the thunder and lightning god of the Syrians. He's pretty much the equivalent of Baal. Baal just means Lord, and it's a reference to the thunder and lightning god of the Canaanites. So here's his bribe speech. Verse 19, "Let there be a covenant between me and you, as there was between my father and your father." Now that would be a reference to Abijah, who preceded Asa on the throne. "Behold, I am sending to you a present of silver and gold. Go, break your covenant with Baasha, king of Israel, that he may withdraw from me." So this is what Asa wants. He wants the northern neighbor of Baasha to break a peace treaty that is currently in force between those two nations and instead attack him on his northern borders, so that that will cause him to back off of his reinforcement of the southern border with Judah. And it works. Money makes the difference here. Verse 20, "Ben-Hadad listened to King Asa and sent the commanders of his armies against the cities of Israel and conquered Eion," which seems to be not very far from the next town, "Dan," we know exactly where that's at, it's the northern city of the northern tribe of Israel, "Abel Beth Ma'akah," which is a little bit farther south from Dan and Eion, down farther, I think past the shoreline of the swampy area of the waters of Merom, and all Kinneroth, with all the land of Naphtali. Now, Kinneroth is the name, the ancient name for the Sea of Galilee. It's a reference to its harp shape. That is the musical instrument. And so Kinneroth is kind of the name of the region right there on the north side of the lake we call the Sea of Galilee. Naphtali was the tribal region immediately north of the Sea of Galilee. And so we're effectively seeing the Arameans, the Syrians, under Ben-Hadad, invade the northern border region with them and taking over key cities in that area to the north of the Sea of Galilee. And that prompts the expected response from Baasha. Verse 21, when Baasha heard of it, he stopped building Ramah and he lived in Tirzah. Now, Tirzah is the capital city of the northern kingdom at this point. It's just a few miles north and maybe slightly east from Shechem. So he stops working on his reinforcement of the region of Ramah, which gives Asa a chance to now move into that area and take it over for himself. Verse 22, then King Asa made a proclamation to all Judah. None was exempt. And they carried away the stones of Ramah and its timber, with which Baasha had been building, and with them King Asa built Geba in Benjamin and Mizpah. Now these two cities are to the east and west of Ramah respectively. And it appears that he decides to tear down the fortifications of Baasha and then make his own fortifications at Geba and Mizpah, keeping control of the border for himself. Because the person who controls the border controls who gets to cross back and forth. It's at this point now that we need to shift over to 2 Chronicles 16. Now, the first part of 2 Chronicles 16 tells the story that we just read here. The only thing really significantly different is that it mentions that the cities taken in the north by Ben-Hadad were storage cities. So they would have had lots of supplies in them that have now gone into the control of the Syrians or the Arameans. But here's God's response to what Asa just did. 2 Chronicles 16, 7. At that time, Hanani, the seer. Now, seer is just a much older word for prophet. Seer describes the idea that a seer sees a vision and then describes it and passes the information along. So, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you relied on the king of Syria, and did not rely on he who is your God, the army of the king of Syria has escaped you. So this is all critique by God against Asa, who has been a good guy up to this point. Remember, he's the one that depended on God for a military victory, which is about to be mentioned here, and then went ahead and set up a revival time for the kingdom of Judah and brought everybody back on board with the proper worship of He who is. But now he's let a potential enemy of the Israeli people escape judgment and has even paid Israeli wealth, things devoted to God, into the hands of that potential troublemaker up in the north. Verse number 8, listen to this critique. Were not the Ethiopians and the Libyans a huge army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on He who is, He gave them into your hand. So this is a reminder. 10 years ago, you trusted God with a huge army that was invading you, and you defeated them because God gave you the miracle. God gave you the assistance. So effectively, Hananiah is saying, God wants to know why you don't trust him anymore. God wants to know why you did not come to him with this problem regarding the Israelis to your north. Why did you go to a pagan, a believer in a false god, in a demonic entity? Verse number 9, continuing. For the eyes of he who is run true to and fro throughout the whole earth to give support to those whose heart is blameless toward him. This passage gets quoted a lot. It's the idea that God knows what's going on in the world. He keeps track of how everybody responds in each and every situation and whether or not they look to him for assistance so that he can help them out. Well, now Asa has shown that he doesn't trust God anymore. So God says through the prophet Hanani, you have done foolishly in this. For from now on, you will have wars. So he's had peace for the last 10 years because of his trust in God. But now, for some reason that is not altogether clear to us, he's gotten full of himself and has reached to a pagan king for assistance rather than trusting God. And now God is going to quit helping him anymore. And so he's going to end up with more war. If Asa had been righteous in his heart, he would have repented at this point. He would have confessed his sins. He would have acknowledged that he was in the wrong and God was in the right. But instead, we are given this as the next thing that happens. Verse 10, then Asa was angry with the seer and put him in the stocks in prison, for he was in a rage with him because of this. So he arrests Hanani, the prophet, the seer, and he throws him in prison, has him fastened in stocks where he has limited mobility. And it's not just him. Asa goes after others who criticize his dependence upon a pagan king instead of a dependence upon the true and living God. Asa inflicted cruelties upon some of the people at the same time. So he has very, very foolishly abandoned God and is bringing God's judgment upon himself because of his mistreatment of God's prophets. Well, at this point, we need to shift to what's going on in Israel. 1 Kings chapter 16, verse number 1, where it says this, the word of he who is came to Jehu, the son of Hanani, against Baasha. Now, if this is the same Hanani that we were talking about in Judah that just got thrown into prison, then his son is also functioning as God's prophet. But he's up in Israel, in the territories to the north. And so this is what he says on behalf of God to the king of northern Israel. Verse 2, since I exalted you out of the dust and made you leader over my people Israel. Now, we need to comment on that. We did not know that up to this point about Baasha. All we knew was that Baasha assassinated the last member of the Jeroboam dynasty. Now we find out that God is the one that told him to do that, and apparently gave him the same sort of deal that had been given to Jeroboam. If you will obey the covenant, If you will live by my instructions, I will make your dynasty last. But if you don't, you also will pay a penalty. Well, he hasn't. And so now God is telling him that he's got a penalty coming. Since I exalted you out of the dust and made you leader over my people Israel, and you have walked in the way of Jeroboam, and have made my people Israel to sin, provoking me to anger with their sins. Now, what does that mean? It means that he's continued the worship of the golden calves at Bethel, which he just recently captured, and Dan up in the north, because that's the sin of Jeroboam. He's the one that started that, and each of his descendants had kept it up. And now the new guy, Baasha, also resorted to it. Now keep in mind, we're only about 46 years past the split in the kingdom. The northern kingdom of Israel has only been in existence for 46 years, and it's been through several kings, and it's in its second dynasty, and all of them keep worshiping this golden calf garbage. So God says to Baasha, through Jehu, the son of Hanani. Verse 3, behold, I will utterly sweep away Baasha and his house, and I will make your house like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Anyone belonging to Baasha who dies in the city, the dog shall eat, and anyone of his who dies in the field, the birds of the heavens shall eat. Same sort of curse put on this second dynasty that was put on the first. Nobody gets to be buried in a tomb. They all get scavenged by birds or wild animals. Let's now go on with the end of Baasha's life. Verse number 5. Now the rest of the acts of Baasha and what he did and his might, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? I think that's a reference to 2 Chronicles 16 and how Baasha had been building Ramah. Verse 6, Baasha slept with his fathers and was buried at Tirzah, which is the capital city of the northern kingdom. And Elah, his son, reigned in his place. Moreover, the word of he who is came by the prophet Jehu, the son of Hanani, against Baasha and his house, both because of all the evil that he did in the sight of he who is, provoking him to anger with the work of his hands, in being like the house of Jeroboam, and also because he destroyed it. All right, so we know that judgment is coming against this dynasty. Verse number 9. In the 26th year of Asa, king of Judah. Now, everything that we'd been looking at before was in the 26th year. So this is almost immediately after Elah comes to the throne. The way it works is that the regnal years, that is the years of the king in northern Israel, kind of goes from fall to fall. So it ends up being over the calendar year that goes from spring to spring. So that's how he ends up being on the throne for 2 years, but only really right around a year. So in the 26th year of Asa, king of Judah, Elah, the son of Baasha, began to reign over Israel in Tirzah. He reigned 2 years. But his servant Zimri, commander of half his chariots, conspired against him. So Zimri doesn't really like the new guy that's come to power. He was on board with Baasha. They were probably buddies because Baasha had been a commander in the army previous to assassinating the last king of the Jeroboam dynasty. So here we go. When he was at Tirzah, drinking himself drunk in the house of Arza, who was over the household in Tirzah. Zimri came in and struck him down and killed him in the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned in his place. So there you see that the kings of Judah, I think I might have said Israel earlier, but the kings of Judah have their regnal years that go over a couple of years on the calendar. So Zimri is assassinated, Zimri assassinates Elah, and he takes over the reign. Verse 11, when he began to reign, as soon as he seated himself on his throne, he struck down all the house of Baasha. He did not leave him a single male of his relatives or his friends. And thus Zimri destroyed all the house of Baasha according to the word of He Who Is, which he spoke against Baasha by Jehu the prophet. For all the sins of Baasha and the sins of Elah his son, which he sinned and which they made Israel to sin, provoking He Who Is, the God of Israel, to anger with their idols. Now the rest of the acts of Elah and all that he did and all they are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. In the 27th year of Asa, king of Judah, Zimri reigned 7 days in Tirzah. So he's only going to last about a week. And now the troops were encamped against Gibeathon, which belonged to the Philistines. So we're going to have to end today because of time. But when we come back tomorrow, we're going to see how Zimri comes to his end. His dynasty is only one person long, only lasts 7 days, but his dynasty is the third dynasty of the northern kingdom of Israel in about 47 years, because the northern kingdom of Israel is just a chaotic kingdom. It is in great turmoil because of its sinfulness.